One thing that I think maybe a lot of people don't quite realize just yet is how big of change this is in Europe to kind of unite this quickly and stand up to Russia so fast. And there have been these extraordinary policy changes. Germany in particular announced that it's going to start spending a lot more on defense. Finland is, hinting that it wants to join NATO. Switzerland is even, joining in on these sanctions. And it's just as if Europe finally woke up. It's really remarkable to see.
I'm Annie Reese. This is Politico Dispatch.
My name is Nihal Tusi.
Nihal Tusi is senior foreign affairs correspondent for Politico.
Increasingly, over the past 20 years, U.S. presidents have used economic sanctions like never before. I mean, it's really extraordinary. They have used them in very creative ways at times to get other countries to try to bend to America's will. It does not always work, to be very clear. The sanctions have a very mixed record. But, short of actual military fighting, they are considered basically the second best weapon.
On today's show, sanctions. What sanctions the West is leveling at Russia, what sanctions it's leaving out, and whether they're going to be enough to deter Putin. Could you put these sanctions into perspective for me? Have sanctions this big and this coordinated ever been leveled at one country before?
Not on a country like Russia. Not on an economy as big and as important as Russia's. And it's interesting because when they started issuing some of these sanctions on Thursday, it was not that impressive, frankly, to a lot of people who watch this stuff, including me. I was like, this is not all that. But then over the weekend, that's when things got really serious. And the European Union and the US and Canada, I mean, just all these different countries came up with these efforts to cut off Russia. And it's not just, sanctions, it's also airspace restrictions and kicking out Russian propaganda outlets. I mean, it was just a variety of different things. And so when you put it all together, this is really unprecedented in terms of the rest of the world using economic and other measures to isolate a country the size and with the strength of Russia, which, let's not forget, has nuclear weapons.
Right. It was interesting because I feel like each country would announce a new different thing and then other countries would come to meet it, including the United States.
It was almost as if some of them were facing peer pressure. I mean, it was like the one that really like had me nearly falling out of my chair was Switzerland. Switzerland is a neutral country, but they're basically saying, yeah, we're going to enforce a lot of these sanctions. Japan stepped in, and it's also not just that countries did things. It's also the ones who stayed quiet or didn't back Russia when they could. And that was really a sign of the isolation of the Kremlin right now. Even in athletic leagues, I mean, even FIFA, the legendarily corrupt soccer organization, made some moves about, saying like, oh, we're not going to hold any games in Russia or something like that. It was kind of like, whoa, even you guys are stepping up. Okay. My understanding is that a lot of the reason for this is because people actually woke up, especially in Europe, and saw, oh my God, this is real. There are actual Russian forces advancing toward Kyiv in Ukraine. He was not kidding. And that really, got them, plus the appeals of Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky. He has really been out there and made very personal, often emotional appeals. So those things were very powerful.
What have been the most devastating sanctions so far and why?
I would say that the sanctions that target Russia's central bank and which cut off Russia from the SWIFT banking information exchange are really devastating. I mean, basically, those combined with some other targeting of Russia's financial sector are going to make it practically impossible for the Russian government to like access many of its assets. And the Russian government keeps a lot of its financial assets in dollars and euros and other currencies besides the ruble, which now basically are nearly impossible to reach.
Yeah. We know that with a lot of these financial sanctions that Biden and others are trying to be very specific in targeting Putin and other Russian oligarchs, you know, cutting them off from their wealth. But how much do we actually know about whether the sanctions are hurting Putin and others at the top?
So I think it's too soon for the people at the very top, in the oligarchs, the Putin himself, to really feel this just yet. But over time, they're going to find they can't travel. They can't get a hold of the money that they once easily were able to get a hold of. Mm-hmm. It's going to possibly put a lot of political pressure on Putin, who seems to basically just, you know, have no checks on his power these days.
Yeah.
I would like to add, though, that, yes, some of these sanctions are very targeted, but others are pretty broad. I mean, going after some of these big banks, financial sectors, things like that, that's not just about individuals. Now, one area, though, of the Russian economy, the most important area of the Russian economy, is the energy sector. Mm-hmm. And neither the U.S. nor Europe has done anything particularly big on that front when it comes to sanctions.
Yeah.
That's partly because Europe relies a lot on Russian energy. But they have also said it's not off the table. And so if they need to escalate, they might do that.
Yeah, that was another question I had about what further escalations there could be. Because as you said, Biden has said that so far energy sanctions are a red line because it would, you know, gas prices would go up, inflation. He doesn't want Americans to sort of feel it in that sense. But it's this dance because it's hard to level extremely devastating sanctions on one country without also feeling the effects at home. And that's kind of what they're trying to do right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the classic supply and demand situation, right? If there's not enough supply and there's the same or more demand and people are scrambling to try to get access to this oil or gas with fewer markets to choose one, if Russia has taken offline, then yeah, it's going to definitely affect prices. You know, I've talked to folks and I'm hearing a couple of things. One is some of them are saying, you know, it's about time that a president asks Americans to sacrifice a bit when it comes to these bigger ideals of protecting democracy and the sovereignty of another state and standing up for freedom and American values. And others are also saying, well, you know what? This is a really good opportunity for the West to get off of its, you know, addiction to oil and gas. Maybe finally, because of this stress, we can see some serious shifts. Why is Europe so dependent on Russian gas in the first place, for example? So it's kind of like, you know, with every crisis comes an opportunity, right? And I think some people are trying to point to that.
So as you're saying, it's going to take a while for some of the squeeze to happen in terms of feeling sanctions. But we know that the ruble has crashed and there are already some effects that are being felt among everyday Russians and the Russian economy. And so are the analysts that you're talking to at all worried that there's a chance that the Russian public actually turns on the West and not Putin for crashing the economy? Like, what are some of the geopolitical thoughts here?
Yeah, this is actually something I'm looking at. It's a very careful needle you want to thread. On the one hand, we're seeing a lot of anti-war sentiment in Russia right now. Mm-hmm. Russians coming out saying, we do not want this war in Ukraine. They're risking arrest. Hundreds have been arrested because they've been protesting the war.
Yeah.
At the same time, there are some who are saying, wait, why are you punishing me? I didn't cause this war.
Right.
Like, why do I, you know, it's not fair. And so going forward, yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible that Putin can take advantage of the situation and say, look, Russian people, it's the West that's causing you economic pain. It's the United States that's doing this. And so he could take advantage of that sentiment. And U.S. officials have, including the president, have said repeatedly to the Russian people, like, we are not targeting you. This is not, we don't have a beef with you, but we have to do this because we have to stand up against this war and we need to make Putin feel the pain.
To the extent that you can kind of look forward, what are you really looking at in your reporting, especially with sanctions in the coming days?
I'm really curious to see if the U.S. and its allies will use energy sanctions. I think that if they go after the Russian energy sector, that will be extraordinary. That will be massive. You know, my sources in the past, long before this, have told me repeatedly that we could destroy the Russian economy if we wanted to. The challenge, though, is simply going after that economy in a way that doesn't rebound in too negative a way on Europe and eventually on the United States.
Yeah.
And so I think energy sanctions is where I'm really going to be watching. Another thing I'm going to be watching, I think, in the months and years ahead is how China reacts to all this. What does China do to make its economy sanctions proof going forward? Because, you know, I think the sense is eventually we're going to have some sort of a showdown with Beijing. And I think they're going to want to find ways not to suffer the way that Russian economy is suffering right now.
Nihal Tusi, always good to talk to you. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Also today, Twitter will begin labeling content from Russian state-affiliated media websites amid a flood of Russian-backed disinformation related to the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine. The company said it began labeling and de-amplifying official Russian media accounts in 2020, but this additional action applies to individual Twitter accounts that share links from those state-affiliated sites. And Supreme Court pick Ketanji Brown Jackson will hold her first meetings with senators on Wednesday, including Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, and the chair and ranking member on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senators Dick Durbin and Chuck Grassley. Today's episode of Politico Dispatch included music composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Be sure to follow Politico Dispatch if you haven't yet, and if you can, leave us a rating and review. It helps more people find the show. I'm Annie Reese. Thanks so much for listening.